Hey guys, welcome to this week's episode. Today we have Landon Horst on the podcast. Mr. Horst, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Ryan. Excited to be on. It's my second ever podcast.
I'm somewhere in that range. So some of you might remember Landon was actually a trainer at Granite back in the day, but now you've gone to the field of dietitian.
Yeah. So after being a personal trainer, I ended up going to MSU in Bozeman, getting my nutrition degree and then becoming a dietitian. I'm at Billings Clinic now, do a program called Weight Smart. So it's mostly medical weight management.
Cool. So what was it that you felt with being a dietitian that would give you a little, how would you be able to help people better versus like just the personal training realm?
Yeah, that was kind of the biggest thing driving me to go a little bit further with nutrition is that I felt as a personal trainer, so much of your client's success was hinged on their nutrition, you know?
Too true.
Right. And I didn't feel like I really had the qualifications to be giving kind of in-depth nutrition counseling or education. And so, yeah, really the only way to do is become a dietitian. And found out that we had the school, one school in Montana with nutrition. So I'm like, yeah, I'll give it a shot.
That's cool. So where, obviously with being a dietitian, what do you feel it is that you most commonly see that people are missing? Like what's the most basic stuff that most people are overlooking for their nutrition?
I would say one of the most common like eating patterns that I see, and I do see patients for like bariatric surgery, so surgical weight management as well as the medical weight management. And really the most common pattern of eating that I see is people that skip meals and go a long time without eating during the day. And then they eat, you know, a lot for dinner and usually after dinner.
But doesn't that mean you can just bank all your calories and just have one big meal, right? Isn't that the...
Yeah, exactly. Well, and wasn't someone promoting that at one time? It was carb backloading.
Yeah. You know?
I tried it. I'm like, so apparently everyone's carb backloading and it's kind of backfiring.
Just unintentionally doing it. Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of it is just like stress and, you know, the fact that people have so much to get done. And I think that combined with a little bit of like fear around food, not even knowing what to eat, kind of gets people to avoid it during the day. And then willpower gives out a little bit in the evening, you know.
You just white knuckle it all day and then just try to make it to bed before you eat everything.
Essentially. Yeah. I would say that's the way most people try to lose weight as well. Right. Just a little more long term.
Yeah.
But white knuckle it. Yeah.
So where would you, if you were dealing with someone who is having just issues with that, where they're eating too much at night, they're not getting in food earlier in the day, what would be your first step for most people in addressing that?
I guess just kind of talking about meal frequency and the benefits, because I think a lot of people have the kind of misconception that skipping meals is a good thing, right? And especially now with
like a badge of honor almost.
Yeah, in a way. You know, and they say, what, you don't get brownie points for suffering more through a weight loss attempt. And so I think people really think that they're doing the right thing for weight loss by skipping meals. And you see more about like intermittent fasting, which I think kind of even more confuses people. And so, yeah, really just kind of talking about how maybe eating more earlier in the day is going to help you with those cravings later in the day. And I think that's something people miss too, is that if you have a problem snacking in the evenings, it's typically not because of something that happens in the evening, right? It's like a breakdown that happened earlier in the day, either like stress or just the spacing of your meals or the composition of your meals. And people tend not to look there, right? They're just looking at like, God, what the hell's happening after dinner? You know, just kind of going overboard in the evenings, I guess.
I feel like that's definitely one thing I tell people is, if you're getting hungry late at night, it means you need to probably be eating more earlier on in the day so that you're not getting to that point later in the day.
Yeah. And then there's this vicious cycle. And my mom called me recently. She's kind of fallen into this trap, I think, where you start eating more in the evenings, weight maybe starts coming back on, or you see the scale go up a little bit. And so your first thought is, I'm going to restrict my calories more earlier in the day. Right. And it's like, you're just compounding the problem. And so I know for my mom, she's like, well, okay, I just decided I'll stop doing breakfast.
You know?
And it's like, but these cravings seem to be getting worse. Like, well, maybe you should have a bigger breakfast, you know?
I was literally talking with a client about that the other day because she's having the same problem. By the time she gets home from her workout, making dinner with kids, she's just starving. She ends up eating, you know, who knows how much, just getting the food ready and then still eats her full meal. And of course, yeah, we look earlier on in her day and like her lunch was actually pretty solid, but like her breakfast was like a hard-boiled egg and like toast or something like that, which, again, not that there's anything wrong with those, but like it's probably just not enough for someone as active as she is.
Yeah. And a lot of it has to do with like that kind of hunger and fullness scale, right? And letting your hunger get too out of hand so that you kind of have to eat and overcompensate with the pendulum swinging the other way. And then, yeah, you get kind of this chaotic hunger fullness thing going on throughout the day.
Do you find that to be kind of an interesting contradiction that a lot of people seem to simultaneously hold the belief that if you eat too much late at night, that somehow like will preferentially get you fatter. But at the same point, they also skip breakfast earlier on the day, so they do end up eating everything at night.
Right. Which is, you know, probably just a disconnect that they don't see the relationship there. But yeah, that's another thing that, you know, I talk about a lot kind of right up front with people is like, there's no foods that are off limits and there's no times that are off limits for eating, right? A lot of people get home from work a little bit late and they're so worried that eating close to bedtime means like automatic storage of body fat that they skip dinner, whatever. And it like just seems to kind of keep making this problem worse for most people.
I actually had with another client the other day where she texted me, she's like, okay, what foods can I not eat? It's like, instead, let's give you a list of like foods to preferentially eat more of. Like, it's going to put you in a lot better mental space for one, because then you're not beating yourself up because like, oh, he said not to have peanuts and I had peanuts. Like,
right.
It's like, how about we focus instead? It's like, hey, I had more vegetables today than I did yesterday. I had more protein than I had yesterday.
Yeah. And that's something I find too is kind of with goal setting, right? You're always trying to do more of an approach goal than an avoidance goal. Right. Rather than kind of like what you just said, rather than saying, I'm going to try to eat less sugar this week, maybe trying to say, I'm going to try to eat more fruit when I have a sugar craving, something like that. People just tend to respond to those a little bit better. But what I find is that when you ask people to set goals, which you want to do, you know, so that they kind of feel like the goal came from them, it's almost always an avoidance goal. And I don't know if that's just kind of the way nutrition culture is.
Maybe you're just not questioning it very well or asking questions.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. But yeah, it's almost always like, you know, this week I just want to not eat dessert. That's like, well, you know, what could we replace dessert with? Cause you usually do need to replace it with something.
Well, like I would love to see a study of like the amount of people who said I'm quitting sugar, whoever actually officially, or like did it for an extended period of time. Like it just doesn't work for 90% of people. And again, sugar is fine. Like it's obviously you should not base every meal around it, but heaven forbid you have a piece of candy or a dessert from now and then, like.
Right.
You're probably going to stick to things better if your diet fits that in versus excluding it for the rest of your life.
Yeah. And then I always kind of have that battle, and I'm sure you do too, where it's like people come to me, they've feared sugar their whole life. And I want to teach them that sugar's not, you know, this like enemy that everyone thinks it is. But I also am worried that I'm going to like kind of push them the other direction where they're like, oh yeah, no, my dietitian said sugar's not a huge deal.
Go with like, if it's your macros, I'm like, well, you know, 3 Pop-Tarts and 5 protein shakes, that's all I need today.
Right. And it's like, I'll see you a couple weeks later. And it's like, okay, so you decided to do a Pop-Tart for breakfast every day. And it's like, well, yeah, you said sugar's no big deal.
Yeah.
It's like, you're, you know, somewhere in the middle,
right?
Like with most things.
All those pendulums.
Right. Yeah.
I like Dan John had a quote one time, something about how people are like, well, what should I eat? It's like, you can have whatever you want. He's like, if you have a pound of salmon, 10 eggs, 2 cups of oatmeal, 3 cups of spinach, you can have whatever you want after that. You know, it's like,
after that,
it's like once you fit in a lot of that nutritious food, you just can't eat that much other food. It is kind of a good avoidance way.
Yeah. You know, that's true. And same with like water intake, you know, a lot of people are drinking soda or whatever it might be. And, or if it's like diet soda, I don't really care that much. But I do say like, you know, try to get in your 64 ounces or however much water. Because same thing, it's kind of, you know, the more of the good stuff you do, it pushes a lot of the bad stuff off the plate or out of your cup, if you will.
But so diet soda, that's cancer causing, right?
Almost immediately. No, that's sarcasm, of course. I'm usually cool with people doing a little bit of diet soda, especially if it's like that, or they're going to have a Snickers or, you know, something
if
like that.
If it satisfied their sweet tooth.
Yeah. Yeah, it's almost like a tool for some people, I think, with weight loss.
So in a similar vein then, what would you say, because you'll get a lot of times people like, well, but that's not healthy, right? And it's like, it depends on what your goal is. Like, obviously, sometimes there will be differences between like nutrition for health versus nutrition for strict weight loss. What would you, I guess, how would you differentiate those two between weight loss and like longevity or health?
Well, then it's kind of a double-edged sword in a way, right? Because if you are carrying extra weight, then weight loss is going to contribute to your health and longevity. If you're already at a weight that you like, you know, maybe then you do kind of avoid artificial sweeteners for the potential that they might be unhealthy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if you're trying to lose weight, I think one thing that people really worry about, and people do ask me, is, you know, if I have to eat this many calories to lose weight, does that mean I have to eat that many calories for the rest of my life? And a lot of people think that, you mm-hmm. know, and I say, no, a lot of the habits have to stay in place, mm-hmm. right? But not necessarily the actual calorie intake. And so people think that they're going to have to eat that few calories forever. Then they kind of feel like they need to be using those diet sodas or more mm-hmm. like artificially sweetened things. Whereas people, if they realize that they can kind of use those as a tool for weight loss, and when they reach their goal weight and the calories increase, maybe they can spend some more of that larger calorie budget on more kind of those nutritious foods.
Like, you know, things they actually enjoy that'll keep you eating it long term.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So in a similar vein, then, what would you say with being a dietitian? What are some of like the most common questions you get on a day-to-day basis?
Some of my favorite questions. My favorite question is just when someone says a food and says, what do you think about that?
Yeah.
Right?
Milk, that's bad for you, right?
Oh, yeah, that.
It's shouldn't like have dairy,
they,
right?
They kind of give you the answer in the question. Well, you probably get this too. It's like people are just so confused. They're like, okay, one last question.
Mm.
Eggs. It's like, was that a question? Yeah. Or and usually, you know, I kind of know what they mean, right? It's like a lot of times eggs, it's the yolk versus the white or yeah. whatever. But yes, I do get that one a lot. It's just like one specific food that people have questions about.
Yeah.
And
it's like, I'm eating 4,500 calories a day, but it's bananas, right? That's yeah. why I'm storing belly fat.
Right. Yeah. And they want that to be the answer, oh, yeah. probably. Yeah. But no, so specific foods for sure. And I do try to kind of dodge those questions. A lot of times are bananas good?
Hmm.
It's like, that's a pretty tough one to answer. You know, but then a lot of it is pretty much like the cravings. Or just kind of a lot of behavioral stuff, you know, where people, more so than what they're eating, it's how they're eating, why they're eating. Mm-hmm. Seems like the more I'm working with people, I'm more so working on those things than the actual, like, foods themselves, you know. Because, and I say this a lot when I'm first, like, working with someone, that I really think most people know how to lose weight, mm-hmm. right? It's like, eat less and move more. But doing it is a challenge, and it seems mm-hmm. like you know, a lot of people can't do it for very long. Mm-hmm. I think I read recently that the average length of a weight loss diet is about 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it kind of goes back to that white knuckling it thing where people are really just giving it their all for 4 months, and at the end of that, they're like kind of out of gas.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
so I know Dr. Mike Isertel wasn't the first one to like coin like a maintenance phase, but his was one of the first ones where I remember like reading about that, the idea of like, do your diet for like 3 months, get in, get out, and then like, let's do maintenance for all, and then maybe you come back to it. And it is interesting. I found that it's a lot mentally easier, I feel like, to look at it and know like, okay, 90 days from now, I get to increase my calories. I can have those fun foods again or have more of them
mm-hmm.
versus this idea of like, if you assume that weight loss is going to be a cycle that you're in for the rest of your life, yeah, it's probably going to be a lot harder to avoid that Snickers or whatever, because you're like, I might never get to have this again. Like, I have to do it. And you just fall off plan again and again.
Yeah, there's no like light at the end of the tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
But let me ask you, do you have a tough time convincing people to do like cyclical dieting?
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. No one, once people start losing weight, they just want to keep losing it. And yep. it's like, okay, yes, but there's a billion reasons we want your calories to go up, because A, like, you're more likely to maintain this long term if we can bring those good habits back in every now and then, versus like this idea of like, yeah, we're just gonna keep losing until you're, you know, whatever, 5% body fat or whatever your goal is.
Yeah.
And then boom, release you into the wild. You're good to go.
Right. Good luck with it.
Yeah.
And really, if you think about like weight loss and the maintenance of weight loss, realistically, if you keep it off the rest of your life, you're going to be maintaining weight loss a lot longer than you're going to be losing weight.
Yeah.
So it almost does kind of make sense to take short breaks through the weight loss phase to practice maintaining it.
Yeah.
Because eventually that's going to be your only job.
That is actually an interesting way of phrasing it. Yeah. Like, there's obviously a lot of health benefits too, to going back on higher calories for a while and like not losing your muscle mass and, and energy and other things like that. But yeah, like I said, a lot of it is just practice. Like, you want this to be your life. It's like, I always tell people, like, if we had, you know, like, it's your 10-year reunion, you're going to see your ex, and we've got 3 months, like, sure, maybe we're going to do a ridiculous, like, we're going to go a little more extreme because you have a deadline. You have to be there by this deadline. But it's like, if you don't have anything specific, it's like, who cares if it takes you 5 months or it takes you 8? It's like, I'd rather take 8 if it means that I'm going to stick with this long term and not be back here a year and a half from now, starting back over 20 pounds heavier and just re-going through the same cycle all over again.
Right. I think a lot of that too is that people have tried to lose weight before and they know that it's not a very long-lived thing for them, right?
Mm-hmm.
They almost feel like they only have a certain amount of time because that's all the longer they've lasted with the diet before.
Yeah.
And so it feels like this rush to get as much weight off in that period of time as possible.
Yeah, before they gain it back again. But yeah. This plan still totally works. Even though I gain it back every time.
Yeah.
No, keto definitely works for me, bro. Like, yeah. That's the only thing that's ever worked.
Yeah.
That's never kept it off, but it totally works.
Right. No, that one works great for
yeah.
me. Yeah. I do hear that a lot as well.
Yeah. So now that you've been in the dietitian world for a couple of years, how has your idea of fitness evolved? Because I know at one point you were doing more like bodybuilding and stuff. How has just what does workout look like for you just in terms of like what you're going for now versus in the past?
Like me personally, mm-hmm. or kind of what I do?
Or just for what you'd even preach to people in general. Like,
okay. I guess those are both a little bit different, but I'll answer them both. So for myself, after the kind of stint with bodybuilding, I definitely got more focused on kind of strength and was considering powerlifting until I broke my ankle. And that was a bit of a setback. So, but then I did meet someone that was a friend of mine that was doing strongman. Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of the center of my training for a little bit, which I really did enjoy. But then, my appendix ruptured, as you know, and so that kind of put a damper on everything for a while. And while I was kind of down and out with that, I was watching all sorts of soccer videos on my phone. And I kind of got back into the spirit of playing soccer, which I did in college. I know I've already told you this.
They don't know you. Yeah.
And so now actually my training is a little bit more geared towards that. Mm-hmm. And it actually feels more like kind of preventative just because the first like weekend playing soccer, I think I sprained both my ankles. I've got like blisters everywhere. My knees hurt, you know. And so I think that's been kind of more my priority now is injury prevention, more so kind of sports performance. And I would say with patients, it's more so just kind of acts of daily living sort of things. A lot of it's like balance or, similar to me trying to kind of bulletproof myself for soccer. A lot of what we do is trying to bulletproof people even just for walking, because that's something we're trying to build up to. And a lot of these folks haven't done that in a while. You can get an overuse injury from even just walking. And so we try to do some kind of preventative exercises that way too.
Mm-hmm. So what is your, with most of your clients, and what is their long-term goal then? Do they stay in the program or is their goal to be able to kind of go out on their own and build their fitness to whatever they feel is?
So for the Weight Smart program?
Yeah.
So the Weight Smart program, and are you thinking more so kind of the exercise side of things or nutrition?
Take it wherever you want, yeah.
Okay. So the nutrition side of things with Weight Smart, the way I've been doing it lately is kind of a three-stage process. So first stage is kind of like I mentioned earlier, working on why you eat, how you eat, where you eat, when you eat, and the kind of last priority is what you eat.
Mm-hmm.
Because I really think those are the things that need to be in place before you even start to worry about what you eat. And so once we work on those things and people have a pretty consistent meal pattern, maybe have identified some of their triggers for eating, things like that, we'll start using a phone app like MyFitnessPal or the one we use is Chronometer. And we'll set calorie and protein targets. And now we focus a little bit more on what foods are we putting at those specific times. And how is that affecting like the cravings or things that we are working on in the first phase? And then once the person has a pretty good feel for like, I kind of eat the same thing every day or similar quantities and I feel like I'm in a good rhythm, we'll try to slowly phase out the tracking. Because that's another thing I don't see people doing long term.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't want to just get to the end of the program and be like, all right, see ya, you know, and eventually they're going to stop tracking and maybe struggle a little bit. So the third phase of the program is to kind of work on getting rid of the food tracking while we're still working together. And then the kind of fitness side of things, it operates more like a hierarchy. We want to start with steps. And I kind of tell everyone that the most important thing for weight loss is how much you move throughout the day. I do see people that exercise hard, like way harder than I do, and they can't lose weight. And a lot of it's because they work a desk job the rest of the day, you know, and have a really difficult time making time for steps or whatever. So typically, if someone's not really doing anything for exercise, we'll just start there. How can we get you closer to that kind of 10,000 steps, standard? And then as they feel more confident with that, maybe we start working on some strength training as kind of the second priority. And if, you know, this doesn't happen often, but if someone does have like maybe an endurance goal or something like that, we might add some specific cardio. But for the most part, it's just steps and kind of strength training that we work on for the most part.
So when you talk about the, you're saying like your list of things and like what they eat, the where they eat, how does that look like for you? Is that like, are they eating in front of the TV type thing or like always being distracted type of deal?
Right. Yeah. So a lot of it is distracted eating or like in the car or at their desk while working, you know. And to be realistic, I don't think everybody's going to eat all of their meals without distractions, right? Yeah. It's like the world we live in doesn't really allow for that. But if you could eat one meal per day that's a little bit more mindful and you're not watching TV or you're not looking at your phone, I think you start to – some of those habits carry over to meals even if you do have a little bit more of a distraction.
It is – when I took the precision nutrition course, that was one of the things they talk in there is about like eating something and like not reading something, not watching something, not listening to anything. And I remember having literally one slice of pizza that way. And it felt like it took 15 minutes. Like it's – it is crazy how much of a difference makes when you actually just like appreciate the food you're eating and are not like just eating it while you're watching TV or scrolling your phone or doing all three at the same time.
Yes. Which, you know, I'm guilty of as well.
Oh, yeah. Right? We all do.
But yes. And it's funny when I ask people to do that, because oftentimes that'll be kind of a homework assignment, if you will. It's really difficult. It's like, it's not just inconvenient. It's like, there's a craving almost for a distraction while you're eating. And I don't necessarily know why that is, but it seems like it's more difficult than you might think to focus on your food while you
eat. It's kind of ironic that we live in a time with the most hyper palatable food of all time, but we still can't actually just eat it without being distracted by something else.
Maybe it needs to be more hyper palatable. It's like a, you know,
like this should distract me from my show and not the other way around. Like,
exactly.
But I mean, again, like I'm guilty of that. Like, I am so annoyed. If I sit down to eat and my wife is not ready to like hit play on what we're watching, it's like, I can't eat this until the show's on, dude. Like that's just science.
Yeah, I get it. And like I said, I try to do maybe one meal per day, you know, and it has helped. And it just kind of gives you that perspective on what you actually eat like most of the time. Yeah.
The other thing I would say with people doing is like, it's only a problem if it's a problem, right? Like, if you can watch TV and you're not overeating, you don't have any body composition desires, or you're like, I'm happy with where I'm at, it's like, okay, well then keep doing it because it obviously works for you. But if you're constantly overeating at night and at the same time you're watching TV while you're indulging in this, it's like, okay, maybe for you that is a problem then.
Right. Yeah, I like to make the comparison, like anything that you want to get better at, would you do it while you're watching TV?
Seriously.
You know? It's like...
dang, I'm stealing
that. Yeah, have at it. Thinking of homework when I was a kid, right? If I was trying to get better at math, I'm not going to do it while I'm watching TV.
Yeah.
Doesn't make sense. And so if you feel like maybe your eating needs improvement, maybe you should focus on it a little bit more than, you know, kind of having distractions.
That is what I've tried to implement too, is just the emotional aspect of eating and like trying to keep a feelings journal while you're eating, which I found it hard to implement. Like nobody ever wants to do that.
Tons of pushback.
But it is impressive at how like we start to realize like, oh, I actually don't need this whatever fifth slice. I'm just stressed now and I'm just having this one because I need to fill that void somehow.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, I think people are really conscious of it. Well, especially if you're writing it down, right? But I know people are conscious of making that decision and they still do it. You know, it's like in the moment you kind of just say screw it and eat what you're going to eat, right? And then after the fact, you kind of reflect on those emotions and you know that it was an emotionally driven food choice, but, you know, then you kind of kick yourself forward and all that.
Yeah. But it's always easier in retrospect than it is in the moment to be like, I can stop myself right here.
Right. Or, you know, thinking of like future you too, you always give yourself more credit. Like, well, yeah, I'm going to eat this now, but I know tomorrow I'll have a little more self-control, make up for it. And that usually isn't the case.
Yeah, it's always a job for future me.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't want to gas up tonight. I'll do it before work. It's like, why past me did I do this? Totally.
Yeah, I know. I do that all the time now. So.
Yeah, same.
Well, actually, on this topic, I was going to say something. One of the things I wrote down to maybe talk about today was a new term I'm coining.
Oh, yeah.
It's like
the fifth one of yours.
Yeah. So it's like philosophy around food, foodlosophy.
Okay.
Okay. Like, and I think, you know, something we were just talking about was like the appreciation around food. And I think this is a like one of the biggest problems with especially weight management, you know, in the United States, is just how easy it is to get food. Mm-hmm. It's stupid. Compared to even 100 years ago, right? I really don't think you would eat your food in a distracted state 100 years ago because of how much more work it took to get it, you know? And so this kind of carries over a little bit into one of the common things I work with people on is like eating well on a budget, you know, because food is expensive. And it almost seems to me that maybe spending a little bit more money on your food, you would appreciate it more, and maybe you'd eat less of it. And I know a lot of folks have kids, and so that's kind of their hang up is like, yeah, but I got to have tons of food in the house for the kids.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know, maybe you don't, right? And I figure now that you're a father, we kind of have free rein to give parenting advice.
I have 2 years of parenting experience. Like, I can say anything on parenting at this point.
That's kind of what I was thinking.
No, and I do agree that it's just like anything. Like, you know, it's always the short-term reward versus long-term reward, where it's like, so if my daughter wants fruit snacks or a bar, which, again, we give her, but I was trying to minimize that. It's like, yes, I know in the short term, if I don't give it to her, she's going to throw a shit fit. And then it's so much easier to just give her that. But it's like in the long term, she's just going to keep going for that same thing each time because it works every time for her. Mm-hmm. And it's like, we actually did that the other day where she wanted a bar after her breakfast. And I was like, oh, no. And she cried for like a minute or so. And then we got watching a video of a monkey eating a banana. And all of a sudden she wants to eat a banana. It's like, okay, this like I'm fine with. And obviously that's not going to work every time. But it's like every little time you do it, it just makes it slightly easier. And every time you make, you know, what is it they say? Like the life you build is made by every decision essentially you're making. So it's like, every little time you're making a vote for the right way, it should theoretically be just a little bit easier each time. Now, again, I'm 2 years into this parenting thing. All the other parents are there watching this are probably like, okay, good luck.
Right.
And I'm never going to say like, you're going to have the perfect eater, but it's like, if you give in every single time, it's no different than an adult. It's like, if you give in and eat fast food every single time, well, no shit that you're having a fast food craving, like, cause that's what you do. And that's also, I think, why a lot of people, if we want to say succeed, cause I don't know that I'd say people succeed doing Whole 30, but like why they maybe benefit from it is like you get away from those cravings for a little bit and you don't have as intense of cravings. It's no different than alcohol, cigarette, drugs, anything like that. Like the longer you can go without it, the easier it becomes to maintain that or, you know, any sort of habit.
Yeah.
Now I'm just rambling, but
well, no, I
take for that where you will.
Yeah. I had a few things to say off of that. One is just kind of there, you know, almost that addiction mindset with certain foods and avoiding them. I think it just gives you kind of that sense of confidence. Like, holy shit, I don't have to eat this food every day. You know, you kind of just build this self-efficacy around not feeling the need to eat that food all the time. The other thing I was going to say kind of back to parenting, because I think we really have you know, a lot of information.
It's your experience here,
Was just kind of thinking, you know, are we trying to create an environment where our kids think food is just completely abundant? You know, because it almost seems like that's the case. And I wonder if it would be the worst thing to tell your kid, like, hey, you know, we're saving that for tomorrow's dinner or something.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody would do that, right? If your kid wants seconds, it's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, historically, food was kind of rationed, you know? And if you, even if you are on a tighter budget, but you're buying like higher quality foods, maybe you just have to be a little bit more
thrifty.
Yeah. Kind of plan it out a little bit better. And I don't think that's a bad thing, even to like kind of teach kids.
Well, and that's even what I've gotten with some of my clients where, I say, like, if you can afford, and this is maybe sounds terrible, it's like, if you can afford a personal trainer, you can also afford to throw away food.
Yeah.
Like, again, in general, yes, try not to waste food. Like, you know, there's other people who want that food, but at the same point, it's like, okay, you tell me you have a weight loss goal, you know, you make, let's say, $200,000 a year. It's like, you can throw away a $5 mac and cheese. Like, it'll be okay. You don't have to eat it. Like, if your goal is to lose weight, this is not helping you towards that goal.
Yeah.
Like, occasionally, like you said, whether it's being thrifty and like saving for another meal or sometimes just admitting like, I'm just going to throw it away. Like,
yeah,
if that's your goal, it's your goal.
Like, yeah. Do you think sometimes those people aren't being all that honest with themselves?
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah. But it's a
it's
much
not a wasteful thing.
Yeah. Well, cause then it's like, it's a moral thing where it's like, I'm just being a good person and not throwing away food, bro. Yeah. It has nothing to do with the fact that I just wanted more mac and cheese.
Right. It's like, but you don't mind throwing away a lot of vegetables.
Yeah.
You know? If those go bad, it's like,
yeah, those poor bastards that just go the same thing of lettuce every week that gets thrown away.
Yep. It's like, why do you keep buying it? Yeah. But yes. And, you know, if you started maybe spending a little bit more on food and buying fewer foods, maybe you would throw less away too. And so, yeah, maybe your food budget would actually be about the same. You'd just be eating fewer but higher quality food.
Honestly, again, that's been kind of my, this kind of similar in there. That's kind of been my goal for this year is just less food waste. Cause I'm so bad at like opening a can of something for like a recipe and using half of it and then being like, well, it's gonna sit in the fridge until I throw it out next week. Like,
right.
But at least in the moment, I'll convince myself that I'll use it sometime between now and then. It's like, there is, it'd be interesting to have the stats on food waste. Cause we do waste a ton of food as a country.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's like, if you're trying to be thriftier, it's like, maybe making sure that you go through each thing before, instead of throwing it away would be a good way to save a lot of money on that.
Yeah.
And then use higher quality foods.
Right. But it does require a certain amount of planning.
It
to,
does. Yeah, I'm definitely not saying it's easy.
Yeah.
And it's not something you're going to be good at overnight. Like, right. I'm still throwing away stuff, but...
Yeah. I like to use the analogy sometimes of, like, starting a new job, you know? So if you start a new job, it takes tons of kind of effort and willpower to learn the new skills and things like that. Which is how eating better is. Mm-hmm. You know, if you haven't really eaten healthy all that much in your life, there's going to be a certain amount of effort you have to put forward in the beginning, just like learning a new job.
Yeah.
But any of us that have had a new job, we know that like 2 years later, you're doing it kind of, you could do it blindfolded.
Yeah. But also it's like, what's your other options? Like you keep doing it this way. It's like, do you expect things to be better in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years? Like at some point, something has to suck for you to develop and grow.
Yeah. Are you just like waiting for the magic bullet to come out, right?
Well, exactly. It's always it's always trying to find a way, like, again, that's like Ozempic and all these other things. It's like, it's always finding another way to shift responsibility to something else. It's like, if I hired a trainer, it's like, well, if I didn't lose weight, it's like, well, it's because it's like, well, no, you also didn't commit. Like, we try and spend money to offload responsibility.
Yeah, that's true. And kind of that thought that any effort is good effort or whatever, right? It's like, if I'm doing something, I can kind of feel good about that it's effort towards weight loss.
Yeah, I put in a lot of work. It's like, doesn't mean you're productive, but you put in a lot of work.
Exactly.
So going forward, where would you like to see the nutrition world? Like, what would you like to see improve in the nutrition world in the next, you know, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years?
That's kind of a loaded question, but...
I mean, aside from you, like, becoming an influencer, making a lot of money at the head of it.
Which is inevitable. So I won't even mention that, but one thing that I really see maybe needing to change is food marketing, for one, you know, and I really think dietitians aren't going to kind of save the world as far as nutrition goes one person at a time, you know. It has to be a lot bigger than that. And I think, food marketing that has kids started on sugary cereals like at, you know, birth, essentially. Until a lot of that changes, I really see that, you know, obesity is going to be a problem.
So really, again, it comes back to habits then. It's like, because it's that same thing. Like, it's being blasted in your face all the time. Like, you're going to, I'm trying to remember what the Daniel Kahneman heuristic is for that, availability bias, where it's like, if you constantly hear about McDonald's every single day, and that's just berated, and so it's always in the front of your mind. So yeah, when you get hungry, you're going to go to the front of your mind. It's like, oh, McDonald's, like, you're going to gravitate towards that versus you heard, eggs and vegetables every day, like, you at some point might start to gravitate more towards that.
Yeah. And maybe it's the people you surround yourself with too, right? So I think that has a big influence, is just your environment. And maybe as more people start trending towards kind of more nutritious eating, which I do think is happening, albeit slowly, you know, maybe that has kind of a collective influence on everyone.
So going to what you're saying on, people you surround yourself with, do you notice that people who are, say, dieting at the same time as their spouse tend to see more success versus the spouse is making no changes and they're making all the changes? Not that you're tracking that, but you notice anecdotally that...
Yeah. I kind of see it go both ways, to be honest with you.
Depends on how much they like their spouse, I suppose. Like,
one thing I have seen, and one thing we offer with you know, the program, is you can do it with your spouse or just with someone else. You know, you could do a group. And sometimes it works with doing it with your spouse, but sometimes it becomes kind of competitive, you know?
And it's like, inevitably when he loses twice as much weight the first week and it's like, I just give up.
Yeah, that's what you see. And, or like, he ate all this and still lost weight, you know? I think the guys tend to do well and maybe the women in that particular situation struggle.
But I suppose it's kind of like, essentially, he's just got a bigger budget. Like, if he's losing weight on 2,300 calories and you're starting out at like 1,600 or whatever, it's like, yeah, of course he fit more in because he just has more space to fit it in. Like, it's no different than someone with money. Like, it's just a different budget.
Yeah. But I think it's also important to know that him eating 2,300 calories probably feels about the same as you're eating 1,600, you know? And this is something I said on the last podcast I was on, so I'll just put it on here too, is I think that makes sense, you know, that women should eat less relative because of their body size and weight. But when you go to Chipotle and order your food, you can't get a women's size, you know? So everything kind of comes in a standard size, and it tends to fit with men's calorie budgets better than women's calorie budgets.
But we also do have kind of like a completion bias where it's like, yeah, we say the husband and wife, they both get the same Chipotle bowl, and it's like they're both going to finish it, right? Because it's like, well, this is what I was given. Polly actually had a good post about this here today. He said, like, a serving size is not a recommendation, it's not permission. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, you still have to figure out what works for you. Just because they gave that to you doesn't mean, oh, I get to eat this whole thing. It's like, they don't know who you are.
Yeah.
It's just like, that's the bowl.
Yeah, they gave that size to a kid and also to like,
some people that bowl's not enough for. Like, everyone's different.
Right. Just speaking of Chipotle, I do try to break mine up into like two or three meals.
Well, you're just thrifty though.
Yeah. I
just know that.
Like, but, and that's mostly a money thing for me, but seems to work well for my waistline as well. Okay, so the last thing I was going to talk about, potential business idea.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, I'm notorious for just throwing out like random business ideas. And this one, I was kind of stewing on it because I'm like, do I really want to share it and somebody steals it from me?
We have like six viewers probably at this point, so it's fine.
Yeah, so I thought it was a pretty safe place to do it, as well as, you know, the fact that it's a good chance I'll never get to it. So,
but there's also, you know, a startup capital person might be listening.
Yeah, so you never know. Yeah, so, you know, maybe that'll happen.
Yeah.
Or somebody else does it and consults me on it because of all my great ideas here. But okay, so the idea is, and I'll tell you my kind of origination from the idea is that a lot of people, are trying to be more active, and we live in Montana.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the biggest obstacles is the weather.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we have like 9 months of winter essentially. And essentially all of the parks become obsolete in the wintertime, right? It's like all these great recreation spaces that we have, are no longer being able to be used. And especially like a lot of the people that I see are a little bit older and they're not feeling very confident, like walking on ice or whatever it is. And, so then really the only other option to be active is to walk at the mall, which nobody likes to do, or go to a commercial gym, which oftentimes, sometimes people feel maybe a little bit, intimidated by commercial gyms. And so sometimes people are trying to find another place to exercise. And so my thought was to build an indoor park, and I was picturing it like just a big, almost like kind of warehouse, artificial turf, and maybe some indoor plants, right? So you can get like some oxygen going in there, skylights, get some natural light in there. But almost just make it kind of a space that it doesn't really necessarily have one distinct purpose, you know? There could be like some fitness equipment and things like that in there. Could also be used for like soccer practice in the wintertime or things like that.
Finally a use for the, what's the name of that place out by Cabela's?
The Sportsplex?
Yes, finally a use for the Sportsplex. We just need to plant a few trees and we're golden.
Exactly. And I looked into it. I think somebody already bought it and made it into something.
Yeah, that place gets bought every other year.
Yeah. Maybe I'll just have to wait for the next time it comes up for sale. Go indoor park.
The whole time you're describing it, I was thinking like, oh, he's describing a gym. Like that's what he's describing.
And
a place to walk inside in the winter.
Yeah, kind of. And like, granted, you could go walk on the treadmill. A lot of people do that. But what if you want to like throw a frisbee with a friend or, something like that? Kick a soccer ball, throw a ball. You might hit somebody at Granite,
so building like a terrarium essentially.
Yeah. Like a human one.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just think, especially not only the fitness aspect, but mental health, and how important it is to be able to get outside or kind of be surrounded by nature. And just the fact that when it's negative 20 outside, not all that many people are able to do that. So, that was kind of the idea. And something I've been thinking about.
Overall, I would say this is not your best business idea, but it was definitely not your worst. I'd put it solidly in the middle.
Okay.
It's still achievable.
Yeah. And most of them are pretty, pretty low as far as probability of me doing them goes. So
it's better to have ideas than not have ideas.
So I think, And now that I put this out there, you know, maybe one will just pop right up.
Mayor. Is there mayor again?
One of the six listeners. Yeah.
Awesome, Landon. Thanks for coming on. You can look for his book, Foodlosophy, next August.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.